Hey everybody, happy Sunday night. Today is April 28th, 2024. This is Across the Pitch. I am Mike Brera, and I'm joined today by my three buddies, Dave Miller and Jose Nunez. Two buddies, I should say. It's the three of us, My brain's all over the place after what's been a very frustrating weekend in Philadelphia. Dave, I will go to you first. How are you doing tonight?
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing good. I mean, obviously, I presume you could only be alluding to the Sixers game earlier, which, didn't exactly go the way any of us were hoping or perhaps anticipating, but you know, it's been a good weekend outside the Sixers. You know, the Eagles had a brilliant draft, so you know, and again, obviously, alluding to the Union defeat, which again, we'll obviously get into a bit later on the show. But I mean, again, it's a shame that you know, the Eagles somewhat set up a softball for both the Union and 76ers to deliver, make it a perfect weekend, and in typical Philadelphia fashion, they missed out a softball.
You know what's funny? It's before Jose, I go to you. It's like, it's so hard to be Philadelphia fans sometimes because you have these moments where you're like in this Eagles vibe and everything's going great because you got these great picks. At the same time, you're screaming at your television because the Sixers can't get a rebound, all while the Phillies have just swept the Padres or whatever they just did up. And the it's such a roller coaster of emotions every single day. It's frustrating. Jose, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. I'm so glad to see both of you. Mike and Dave know this, and some other folks know this, but it's been just such a busy two and a half weeks. Having been out in Lincoln, Nebraska for a few days, Chicago for a few days, came home for a day or two to see my kids, and then out in North Carolina for a full week for work. It's nice to finally be settled. There's something to be said about sleeping in your own bed, that's for sure. And anybody who glorifies being in a metal tube at 10,000 feet over ground in the air really needs to rethink it. But man, what a bummer to see this streak, for what it's worth, whether you appreciate it or not. Such a bummer to see the Union lose the way they did, especially with the chances they had. And I know we're going to talk about it and also move on to the Seattle match, which, Mike, I still remember being there with you, but I was obviously far more wet than you were as I was on the ground taking videos. But holy smokes, can't believe we're coming around to do this all over again.
It was, well, we'll get to that. I remember the whole squeegee video that went just absolutely viral that I posted online. Valerie says, howdy, nice to see you three. I know, Valerie, it's weird. The three of us haven't been on camera for a bit because last time, I think, I was sick or I was working. No, I was working late that night, that Saturday night beforehand. So you guys took over for me, which was appreciated. But it's nice to have the group back together. We'll discuss Seattle, though, in a few minutes. The Real Salt Lake game was basically last year's team kind of coming to this season, saying hello real quick and reminding us the frustrations we have with this club. Because I don't know if you guys saw over the break, the people who are watching, I was on PHLY Union with JP and Renee Washington this past week. And they asked me, what is your vibe about this club? What are you feeling right now? And for me, I was like, this team seems different. And it seems like it's a new energy, a new vibe. They're not playing scared anymore. And then suddenly they kind of make me eat my own words and they have a performance like that. So Dave, very frustrating night for us as Union fans. What did you think of the result and the loss at home?
Well, I mean, it was a weird game. It was very much like a huffing and puffing, you know, trying to break down, you know, just Real Salt Lake they just couldn't do it apart from, you know, Gazdag scoring that probably the most difficult chance that they had all night, managing to sort of like it was back to goal hook. Like it was more like a drag back, more like drag the ball back into the goal as opposed to like a back heel, wasn't it? It was like a fun piece of skills. Any time they actually found the back of the net, they had plenty of chances. And I think you might have shared one of the chances earlier on. I don't know if it was I don't know if it was you or I've been told this on. Someone had shared the chance earlier when Gazdag literally was about 3 yards out and someone managed to like completely get his foot wrong and just like smash it at 7 or 8 yards wide. And then I think Uwa immediately after coming on, I think he just about missed the ball and sort of like all those chances go begging. And at the other end, Andre Blake has a calamitous moment, which is probably a once in a blue moon, and they score a fantastic volley. And sort of like that's the only real two moments that you could think of from Salt Lake in the entire game, as Union have that big bundle of chances, which again was just huffing and puffing. They just couldn't hit the back of the net, apart from Gazdag's well known in the brilliance.
Yeah, Jose, how about yourself? You didn't make it to the game, did you last night? Did you come in late? Were you there?
No, I wasn't there. Just some difficulties getting there, home, etc. You know, you leave it to airlines and airports, and you know, one minute, 2 minutes suddenly becomes something a heck of a lot worse. But nonetheless, man, this game was really, really fascinating because whether you believe it or not, statistically, this was a 50-50% possession, which is one of those very, very rare instances where the Union actually have equal possession, right? And you could even argue that, you know, when the possession's within 5 or 6%, it's just a very tight game. But the Union typically don't even touch 40% possession, I don't think. Maybe hover in the 35s to 36s. So to see the Union not only equal Real Salt Lake with possession, but also momentum-wise, I think you could argue that it was actually mostly Union for most of the match. And Salt Lake, to them, took advantage of the opportunities that they had. As Dave mentioned, the first goal by Gomez was, in my opinion, totally Blake trying to cover far post before securing near post, and credit to Gomez by just, you know, smashing it and seeing what happens. But then, man, those two chances, and Dave, you're right. It was Uwas was right after he joined the match, I think like 5 minutes after. But then, and you can see the clip on my Twitter, but the sequence leading to the Gazdag miss, which was, I think, like 15, 16 passes that the Union stringed together going from one side of the field, one attacking third side of the field, back to the defenders and a swing it to the other side. It honestly, and I hate to make the European comparison, but it honestly looked like Pep Guardiola ball, where like they were just passing it around Real Salt Lake. Now, can't forget that Real Salt Lake was without Diego Luna, which is a gigantic piece of that attack, but obviously it didn't matter, and credit to them for figuring out what some players missing, and really the Union more or less, I think, containing Chicho Arango as well as they could, obviously an assist, but nonetheless, not as much damage as he's done to other teams.
No, I mean, they just scored four against Chicago too.
Yeah.
I mean, and so this is their second game on the road. I think that's what frustrated me too. You know, it's a West Coast team coming off another consecutive East Coast trip. You have to take advantage of those moments when they're there, which was very frustrating. And also, if you remember before the first goal, I think it was, McGlynn had a really great shot on net that was blocked by Bedoya by accident. And that was just one of those, that was kind of like that's like how the night went in a nutshell, right? Just, we were almost there each time, but just something was missing at the very last part of the final third. But I think what frustrated me about the whole Blake situation, and again, I'll shoot to you guys for your opinions as well. We knew he had to play on Tuesday night against Seattle because of the MLS rules with the game being postponed to another date. I personally thought that they should put Semele in the net against Real Salt Lake, let Blake sit a couple more days rather than put him back-to-back performances. And instead, I want to say rush him back. I mean, he did train fully, so I wouldn't say he rushed back, but he probably could have used a little bit more time off. And then after the game, you see him kind of ailing a bit, right? His health is clearly not 100%. Dave, do you think it was the right idea to put Blake in net? Forget the goals. Just, I'm talking about his health and overall season. Do you think we should have gone Semele or should have kept Blake in there?
Well, I remember speaking to Jose on the last podcast, and I basically said, is it worth, you know, Andre Blake continuously being in, out, injured one game, or being injured, coming back for a game or two, getting injured again. And it's just in that sort of similar cycle. Would it be worth, as we sort of alluded to, as leaving him out for an extra couple of games, making sure it was 110%, and then, you know, full guns blazing, heading into the summer period. But obviously, he started in goal, and again, it was a positive. He came through the game unharmed. I think when questioned about his health and whatever after the game, he sort of didn't want to speak about it. So again, that was quite still a touchy subject. Maybe, who knows, whether he's 100%. At the end of the day, who knows? It's one of the weirdest situations. You sort of expect it from a central midfielder or like a fullback or a winger when, you know, their body keeps breaking down. But goalkeepers, it's just bizarre to see a goalkeeper getting injured every other game and not being able to actually play out a full game without, you know, their body breaking down, without their groin, you know, groin overextending, having a hyperextended knee, whatever's going on with him. His left leg, it's just a constant occurrence. I mean, he's a great goalkeeper, but again, as you sort of alluded to, Mike, is it worth, you know, leaving him out for the next couple of games and to ensure that he is healthy enough to play when it matters?
Of course. And Valerie says, absolutely agree with that. We should have used Semele since Blake has to start on Tuesday. And Jillian from the one team we agree on says, hello. Hi there, Jillian. Hope to see you at Super Park soon. Jose, I mean, I know that Blake has a long season ahead of him, and I think that's what you alluded to online on Twitter as well. This isn't just MLS we have to worry about. We have Leagues Cup. We have his international duty, Copa, all that stuff. There's a lot of soccer to play for everybody across the board, Andre Blake included. How are you feeling after seeing him last night?
I mean, I think the way I described it in some writing that I'm doing is that, you know, that Gomez goal in the first half, which honestly felt like a huge dagger considering the momentum and how it was all going, like it just felt like such an uncharacteristic, you know, mistake of his. And I think that's sort of what we've been seeing a lot of this year, right? Both as fans and as, you know, members of the press or media, whatever you want to call us. But it just feels like something's off. And yeah. I don't know if that off gets fixed in 1 or 2 weeks, or if it's a longer off that needs to happen, right? And obviously the union have some juggling to do, and I think that decision's going to be forced on them before we know it. I think a lot sooner than they ever expected. And again, I said this with Dave last time we spoke, and I've said it to other folks who are in my immediate orbit, and I know I've been harping on this for a little bit, but I take a little bit of pride in this, but like the union, ever since Holden Trent got that injury that required surgery, they've been put in a hole where they have to make a decision about a goalkeeper, and I think it's going to be forced upon them and sooner rather than later. So I wouldn't be surprised if I actually pulled up the roster that they need to use. I don't know where I put it, but I can't remember. It was Blake on net, so he was healthy at the time. Obviously, there's circumstances where that can switch, but I feel like Andrew Rick's going to get a first team contract soon. I don't know what that means to Holden Trent or Trent Holden. I forget which is his first name. I never Holden like it when Trent. People. I don't like it when people have two first names as a full name. I don't know what happens to him. I know when I asked Jim during a press conference, he, you know, sort of mentioned that it, you know, situations like this put him in or put the organization in. Thank you, Jillian. She always corrects me, and I love it. Put the organization in just an awkward spot, right? Because you have to either waive a player, or are you really going to ride a roster with four goalkeepers like on the senior squad? It just seems like a lot, right? And sure, Andrew Rick has earned every opportunity. Give him that. Jim and Marlon LeBlanc have spoken very, very highly of him. But it starts to feel like the sentence that Jim says, and I'd love to hear from both of you and you specifically, Mike, since you haven't been weighing in too much, but like when Jim says, oh, Andre knows his body best, does he? I mean, it's tough, right? Like it's very difficult to believe that when you continue to see these unforced breaks, right? Taking a goal kick in Atlanta and then limping. And my understanding is that after this match, he ended up limping into the locker room. Obviously I wasn't there to see it. So does he know his body best? I don't know if you would categorize or describe the way that he looked during that clip after the match in the press room or in the mixed area. Thank you, Todd Lewis, for sending that along. He looked like a sad puppy dog, right? Like very, I don't know, like upset, mourning his career in a way. Like it was really bizarre wearing all black with the hood up and answering upset. But I don't know, Mike, I'd love to hear from you. I know I just threw a slew of different things, but that's just sort of like a train I thought I've had. It just doesn't seem like it's a week or two break, because obviously 2 weeks did not cut it after Atlanta.
No, I unfortunately understand what you're saying. Colin says, hello, guys. Appreciate you joining us, Colin, for tonight's chat. I mean, let's just say across the board, professional athletes are praised for playing banged up, Joel Embiid is a perfect example of that right now, right? I mean, you see him, he's got the Bell's palsy, he's got a knee issue, and it's like, oh, you're this heroic person. But at the same time, playing banged up and playing not 100% can be more detrimental to your team than it is actually helping your team. Because if Andre's at 80%, but Semle's at 100%, I'm taking Semle at the way he's playing right now. If it was last season, I'll take Blake at 50% over Joe Benedict. No disrespect to Joe, but that was just the reality of it. Oliver's playing so well right now. You can afford to basically step in and say, Andre, we know what you're saying, but you're too valuable to this club moving forward. And maybe it's not just health. Maybe he's also has in the back of – and again, I'm not saying this is how Blake feels. I'm just saying when players get hurt a lot, if they overthink the injury, overthink playing, mm-hmm. they sometimes tend to hurt themselves more because they're not playing loose. They're playing tight, and they're not able to just say, I can get this ball without risking injury. They just end up tweaking something in the process. So I think the Union have to learn from the Bedoya situation about when it's time to kind of pull the reins back on a player that's aging. And although Blake is not terribly old for a goalkeeper, he's still, what, 34 years old, right? 33?
He's as old as I am.
Yeah, he's the same with me, so I guess it's not that old. But,
but well, the point it's, being, it's ancient in yeah. soccer years.
Yes, exactly. So I think the conversation has to be had that he needs to be just put on the shelf for a while. And then, again, physical and mental at the same time. Jose, go ahead.
You know, I've talked to some folks who have shared some information and take it with the boulder of salt. Okay. But it sounds like maybe as soon as the smallest, and there's nothing wrong with this, as soon as the smallest tinge of uncomfort or discomfort, I should say, from that leg that he feels, maybe he feels like he needs to, like, you know, pull out and take a break, that type of thing. So I don't know, man, it's fascinating in terms of a situation, right? And I think like Bedoya, it's almost like, what is the exit strategy, right?
Right.
You know, you too know this very well. I had been harping for the longest time about how does this city move on from Alejandro Bedoya? They almost shit the bed doing it. They sure. sort of fixed it and into a situation where it's maybe working well. I think him playing 90 minutes this past game was sort of crazy, but okay.
We'll like, discuss go on. That too. Don't worry, but go ahead. Yeah.
But you know, what is Semla the exit plan for the Philadelphia Union post Andre Blake? Is this sort of like a baton exchange in a way? I don't think they ever envisioned it that way, but is that something worth thinking about now? I don't know.
Well, Colin brings up a great question. He says, you think part of it is Blake saying, man, I want to be out there because Oliver's playing so well, in the sense that he doesn't want to lose his starting role. I don't think the Union would simply just put Semle over Blake this season. It would have to be by injury for that to happen, in my opinion.
And it has happened that way.
And it has happened that way. I think Blake is also a realist, and he's a very smart guy, and he can probably see that this kid's playing really well. And if I'm not playing well next season, there is a reality where, I mean, you see with quarterbacks all the time in the NFL.
The one thing I will add to this little wrinkle that I think it's very important, and Dave, we'll go to you then since I keep on interrupting. the other thing to remember is Andre Blake is also the leader of Jamaica for the national team, right? So he needs to play well to be selected to help qualify for the World Cup, to hopefully play in a World Cup, and to do well in Copa America, so he's not losing his starting spot. But it's also a dual-edged sword because he needs to be healthy to be a starting keeper for Jamaica as well. So it's a fine dance. And I listen, he knows far more than we do in terms of how to be a professional soccer player, how to handle injuries, how to know when to stop, when to go, etc. But it just feels like he just maybe needs to sit for a little while, right? Just take it slow, you know, like the statue will be built for you. Believe me, it's not going anywhere.
And this is not to knock his caliber or his quality. It's just simply, not at all. You're not 100%. That's all this is. It's not anything knocking Andre. We know how great he is. Even at 90%, he's one of the best keepers in the league. Dave, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, of course, like it's probably been touched upon already. Like as a player, when you're not 100% or, you know, you're worried about getting hurt again, you don't perhaps do the stuff that you typically do. I mean, not everyone's mental like Jose Martinez, and the leg will be hanging off and he'll still be sliding into challenges, trying to dive in like some players do. They do, like, I mean, as a goalkeeper as well, like contesting for crosses, you know, trying to climb over players for headers and stuff like that. Like, there's a lot of impact on your body, when you're, especially on your legs and your knees, when you're jumping, when you're falling back down on the ground. Like, as a goalkeeper, does that then perhaps make you less commanding your penalty area and things like that? Does that allow teams to perhaps get more cross into the box ever? And again, like, you see it all the time when a goalkeeper's injured, and obviously, I think Isaiah, you'll probably remember this better than most people, the League Cup final when Kepa for Chelsea refused to go out of goal, and you think even with that start of extra time because he was injured, and it's sort of like, it's not necessarily a, you know, that you don't believe your goalkeeper is that good enough. It's just the fact that he's injured, and especially when you are playing in goal, that's the one position on the field that if you do make a mistake, it's going to be magnified. It's going to lead to a goal. It's going to lead to a penalty. It can lead to a red card, whatever. A mistake in goals is game changing. And if your goalkeeper's not 100% fit, he's not going to be doing the stuff that he's typically going to do. He's more prone to mistakes because, you know, he's not going to be able to go across at full stretch to try and stop a shot going into the bottom corner, tipping the shot over the crossbar, whatever. I think for Blake, it's just a situation of, again, players believe that they're fit enough to, as you sort of said, players know their own body, and you give a player an option to play 9 times out of 10. And if they're playing 70%, 75%, 9 times out of 10, they're going to say yes.
Yep.
See, with the Sixers, I mean, like, John Embiid's like playing like at 30%, and he's still throwing himself out every night playing. Do you know what I mean? If an athlete is offered the chance to play, they know that they can actually get out there, they're going to do it, even if it's not 100%. And that's not to say Andre Blake's injuries this week. Andre Blake's, no, if he has got any lingering issues, we're at fault for his goals this week. So again, I think, apart from the one mistake, he's kicking looked fine. But like, again, it's going to be playing on your mind. If you're not at 100%, it's, oh, if I go for this cross, am I going to land awkwardly? If I kick this, kick this at the wrong angle, is my knee or is my hip going to go, and is that going to cause an issue? Like, again, it just makes, you know what I mean? Like, would Jim play other players in that team if, say, you know, they weren't 100%? You know, we see, well, the excuses at the moment that Tyree Rebo's not 100%, and that's why he's not playing. That's why he's not playing. Well, Dave, that's been the excuse.
Before I go to the comments, they kind of did that with Glesnes last year, and you knew Glesnes had an injury. And they were kind of riding him into that streak. I mean, that's exactly the same thing. And look, you missed Jacob for a playoff game because of it.
Yeah, we're not going to start rumors, but again, he's getting there. But he had a terrible start to the season. He was a liability defensively to start the season. Of course, the own goal was a freak accident. But you look at some of the goals they conceded. Glasner was at the heart of it, and he wasn't at 100%. Mm-hmm. And you could question whether he wasn't at 100%. Obviously, he missed a lot of the off-season as well. Rehabilitating, so he wasn't there for parts of pre-season. So he missed that sort of, like, do you know what I mean? So, you know, he missed like a lot of pre-season stuff. Like, so again, he's then playing catch-up, and he's then, because it's Jacob Glasner, he's our guy, he's our Iron Man, we've got to put him straight back out there. He's then playing behind the game. And it does, you know, being not 100% does, I know most athletes never are 100%, but when you've got lingering issues, or, you know, you're still in that process of recovering from an injury, or your body's still healing up properly, you're getting thrown out there into a high intensity game, you aren't going to be as sharp. You're not going to be as confident as you perhaps are, you know, having played 15 games in a row and you're at 100% like a Gazdag or Jose Martinez.
And when you have a season as long as you do, back-to-back seasons, you have to be more conscious of your body and say, can I make it the whole season, rather than just worrying about this current game. But Dave, you mentioned Gazlag, and Jose, I want to ask you this question that T-Mac 803210 brings up, and I'll get to the rest of the comments in a second. So he says, with summer rule changes incoming, is Gazlag the easiest, cheapest to buy down to get an extra U22 spot, or to then add another DP? Any thoughts on that? I know you tweeted about the summer changes a bit earlier this season, but any thoughts to that?
I don't think that they'll touch Gazdag's contract. I think this is pure speculation. I think that U22 what can I say without getting myself in trouble? I think that the changes that are coming this summer that are yet to be announced, you know, obviously we saw the article from The Athletic, Tom Bogert, et cetera. I think the U22 slot will be used for someone very young who could be in Europe very, very quickly.
Dropping hints, but we're just going to
I think that's just a suggestion. And I also think that I think designated player wise, I wonder, and I can say this out loud, I wonder if the sale of the international slots that we just saw to Nashville are a way to put a cohesive package for a Julian Carranza.
I was thinking that too.
Mm-hmm. To give him an actual competitive offer. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, this is all speculation. The summer, it's going to be very interesting when we start getting closer to July and probably even before that. But yeah, those are my thoughts. That's all I really want to say before I start talking too much.
Fair enough. I will just bring up Scott's comment real quick. He says we go live. Awesome to listen to you three. Appreciate Scott. By the way, every time we record, this will be live for the most part. So please join in. We try to do it once a week. Sometimes it's every 10 days since the three of us are doing more things than we probably should. Again, T-Mac, thanks for joining us tonight. And Valerie mentions, and this is one thing I want to talk about tonight. Ty looked like a lost child. I know, I saw that too. Ty looked like a lost child last night on the sideline. And that's the thing, is the substitutions so far this season have been pretty good. I've liked the fact that Jim has kind of did the switch with Bedoya and Quinn Sullivan, where Sullivan replaces the striker while Bedoya comes in onto the right side of the diamond. Last night, obviously, that wasn't being used because Bedoya played for the 90 minutes. And rather than Sullivan moving around, they just brought Ua in as his replacement. Now, I know that Tuesday is kind of on the radar here with how they're going to rotate. Ua starting up front, so is Marcus Anderson because Carranza was out that game. I think it was for a concussion, if I remember correctly. But the issue was, later on in the game, you needed a goal. So you put Chris Donovan into the game. And it just... I don't. Again, we can go ahead before I keep talking. Go ahead.
Marcus Anderson was injured this weekend for Union and Union 2 with.
So is he going to play on Tuesday?
I don't know. That's the other thing. Okay. He was on the injury list before the Union proper, which then meant that he wasn't going to play for the Union 2. So just another thing to think about, right? Like,
fair.
Anderson's technically out. Mikel Ua came in as a sub this past weekend. Congratulations to him and his wife. Welcoming, I think, a boy, I think. And as I look at this, I'm guessing Lowe was totally a scratch because of Tuesday's game.
Because of Tuesday, yep.
Yeah, so again, just as I looked at the roster that's set technically for Tuesday, yeah, I mean, like Anderson and Ua are sort of the biggest question, and I'm intrigued because we have not seen Mbaizo in a while.
I think we saw this last season. Dave, I know you in particular were revved up every time you saw it, but Jim would make these substitutions that just didn't make sense. Like he'd bring in Nathan Harriel when we're down a goal, for example, or some sort of odd thing like that. It just felt like Curtin was kind of going for the draw last night. Once it was 1-1, I don't know if you guys felt that at all either. Didn't really feel like he was going for it. But then once he went down 2-1, there's nothing to lose. You might as well take Bedoya out, let him sit for an extra 12, 15 minutes, bring in Baribo just as another striker up top, and just switch the formation around to at least try to get a goal. Because it's not like you had anything to lose. Whether you lost 3-1, 4-1, it didn't matter at that point. You might as well just try to get another body in there. Did you like the substitutions last night? Did you feel like they were going for a draw as well? How did you feel about that?
I mean, they were more circumstantial, weren't they, more than anything. I felt like obviously bringing Uar on, you know, whilst looking for a winning goal. I don't blame that sort of change, but again, you know, you played Ali Bedoya for 90 minutes in the last game you played. You know, he's 37 years old now, which is no disrespect to Ali. I mean, but again, can you really trust a guy who's been running up and down the pitch to go for a whole 90 minutes, you know, again in a high-tempo game. Perhaps not. Ali did look like very tired towards the end of that game. Perhaps you could have, instead of taking Sullivan off, could have brought Bedoya off, put Uam in a more advanced position and move Sullivan down. The Bueno change was more because Jose was injured and actually was asked to be subbed off. So it's understandable. And then the last one was more, you know, we need a goal. We've got to make this change now. Otherwise, which again, I mean, they were perhaps all circumstantial more than anything, but I don't really have an issue with any of the changes myself, apart from leaving Bedoya on instead of Sullivan.
Yeah, agreed. Jose, how about you? Any issues with the substitutions? Because I liked how Jim has done everything so far. I like that earlier in the season he mentioned listening to his staff, changing formation up a certain way because of what his staff says. I feel like just last night was more so the curtain of 2023 rather than this year. How do you feel about that?
You know, I don't think it's hard to argue with yesterday, and just hear me out, right? This is a game where the team was actually holding 50% possession. Mm-hmm. Momentum-wise, it was also going along with the Union, right? Like, if I don't know if you look at ThoughtMob or any of these other data sites, but it sort of gives you an idea of, like, what the momentum was in terms of chances scored or chances created over a period of time versus what the other team was doing, where the ball was on the field, et cetera. So it uses an algorithm to show you sort of like a waveform of who actually had the momentum going their way. And all signs pointed that Jim really should not have done anything in terms of substitutions yesterday because of the way that things were going, yeah. Right? If they take the two misses that they had with Gastag and Ua and those go in, we're not having this conversation. We're not arguing about substitutions.
That's fair. That's very fair. And listen, and to your point, Curtin did say we played well in a lot of parts. At the first 20 minutes, they played well. The second half, they clearly dominated for most of the time. So I don't disagree with you. Janice says, absolutely love listening to your takes on this game. I appreciate Janice joining us. T-Mac says that would require actually giving Brebo a chance. Feel bad. They really seem to think he's a complete miss. Worse than Davo. I would say yes, it's worse than Davo because this is the reason why. Financially, it's worse than Davo.
I would say Gino Portella, who was making a good Him chunk too. Of change, and he never featured anything but Union 2, I think, for like a match or two.
He played in the preseason last year. Remember he had a goal like early on?
It was preseason. Something fucking ridiculous, yeah.
Our boy Eric from 140 says exactly. It was a perfect Union game to lose. All signs pointed to winning. So the Union would, of course, lose. It's the Union way. And you know what makes that worse, Eric, is the fact that we have several games in hand right now. Not so much now because of last night. We had two more now.
Well, one more after tomorrow.
Yeah, it was a Tuesday. It was a perfect chance to keep climbing the table. And I feel like we play a lot of Western Conference teams so far this season, which really
that's absolutely true. I forget what game it was, but the Union don't travel outside of the Central time zone for the rest of the season this year.
Really? Well, that's awesome.
That's fantastic. The way that the schedule makers came up with this, the Union got all that out of their system. Pretty sure.
Yeah,
that can change with League's Cup.
Yeah, so says that League's Cup. Oh, this is such a pointless tournament.
Now, one thing I do want to bring up. Imagine how everybody. I'm sorry, everybody who's listening. How fucked this team would be if they were still in the Champions Cup.
Well, okay. So funny you mention that because Columbus is obviously still in the tournament. We want to see Columbus kind of do well in the sense that they will then prolong their MLS, you know, focusing, and they'll focus more on that. At the same time, we obviously want Monterrey to win for the Union to be into the Club World Cup. And then Eric mentions games in hand, a homestand to pick up points, and now the best we can get is 3 points. And that's the thing. I don't think we need to discuss the RSL match any further. I think Bedoya, if you look on Jonathan Tannehill's post from earlier today from the Inquirer, he mentioned how Bedoya just kind of went off and really just called out the team. I'll summarize it as that. He called out the team.
I want audio. I've been waiting for audio of this. No one's popping up with audio. You don't have to read it. I read it. But what that's missing is his inflection. You know, as captain. Yeah, as a captain, the inflection of his, like, even in the sentence, like, you know, you guys are lucky, or whatever it was, that you media guys were not here right away. I was really fired up. Shit, man, I wish I would have been able to listen to that. You know what I mean? Where are the microphones in this locker room? Come on, man.
I'll read just excerpts of it, just for time purposes. He said, I'm glad you guys, the media, took a lot longer to get here because I had time to cool my head a bit. But yeah, I'm freaking pissed, man. We should never be losing this type of game at home. Fast forward a bit, he says, I'm really frustrated because I wanted to keep this streak going, and it was there for the taking. Tonight at home, second half, we did more than enough to win this game, and we came out losing. And that was a better response to that game than I thought Curtin's was. I thought Curtin's was very professional, very much, it's over with, let's move on to Tuesday. And Bedoya came out, it's not good enough, we need to be better. Janice, the story on Baribo is we're not sure. He's just riding the bench for a lot of money. And unfortunately, that's kind of the answer we're left with, because nobody seems to be talking about it with the front office or the coaching staff. Let's talk about Seattle.
We've asked, and all we've been told is that it's just tough to replace Julian Carranza and Mikel Ua, that he just needs to show it in practice, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just honest, just being super transparent. We've asked.
No, that's what he's been telling us. And Chris Donovan's clearly done enough. So Seattle versus the Union. Okay. Last time this game was right in between the CONCACAF Champions League, and it was a whole mess of that. We switch up a rotation, and I will be discussing that lineup in a second. But within 6 minutes, the Super Park was a mess, a flood, really, which was both funny for viewing purposes, but not really great for playing purposes. So we have this awkward Tuesday night match in 2 days. Dave, what do you want to see on Tuesday night? And I can go through the lineup in a second if you want me to refresh your memory.
Christ, yeah, I forgot about that. This,
okay. That's if you bizarre want me to tell you.
No, that's fine. I was going to say, not about the game. I'll just say I forgot that you had to play the exact same team, which to me is bizarre. Cause I mean, again, like, as if Blake was injured and couldn't play. I don't know if Blake actually started that game. Yeah, as if Blake was injured and couldn't actually start that game.
No, Blake's in there. So just to give you a reminder.
Yeah. If Marcus Sampson is injured,
they had to put a substitution in.
He was listed as out for the Real Salt Lake game. Is that a way to just like flex him out? I don't know, man. Like, I'm just literally sharing off of the injury report. So I don't know what that means to his start, because that was actually his first ever start for the Union, I think.
Yeah.
I think so too.
Or was it Pachuca? I can't remember. One of the two.
So the lineup was Ua, Anderson, Gosdag, Bueno, Martinez, Sullivan, Harriel on the left back, Lowe, Elliott, Olivier, and Blake. So right off the bat, you're not going to have Wagner to start the match. He is, I believe, as a substitution, if I'm looking at it correctly, he is a sub. Glessens is a sub as well. Bedoy is a sub. So if Marcus Anderson cannot start, there is no Julian Carranza in that lineup. He was out for that match completely. So you're going to have Ty Baribo, and you're going to have Chris Donovan. So if Marcus Anderson's out and you're going to put Donovan up top, then you're left with one forward behind him. And if Baribo can't play on Tuesday night, what are we doing right now? But Dave, go ahead. Back to your thoughts on for Tuesday. Now that you've heard the lineup.
Again, so I mean, if Marcus, I mean, would that substitution count as a in-game substitution? Or
I don't know, man. I mean, that's what I mean. We're getting into the smallest letter of the law now. You know what I mean? In terms of the situation.
That's what makes no sense. The game was, there was just, 2 minutes of gameplay. Just restart the game from the start and let teams pick the teams they want to play. Do you know what I mean? It's not as if the Union would 1-0 up or 2-0 up, whatever, in the situation, then you could sort of understand it being replayed after like 43 minutes, whatever, like 50 minutes. But the fact the game is being played from like the third minute and nothing's happened, it's not like anyone got yellow carded. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was no reason to restart the game from that current situation. It's not as if a major incident had happened in the game. It's not like a penalty was awarded and Anderson was about to take it and then the game got postponed after that. Like,
we can't even watch it because they scrubbed it off of Apple TV. You can't even watch the first, whatever, 6 minutes it was.
Do you know why they might not be able to do that? For gambling purposes. I'm just saying.
You're a sick man, but it's probably true.
That might be one reason why they can't. Because not just for like their own policy, but because of just the financial part of gambling.
Yeah,
because
people already put bets on that game, right?
Refund so they carry the bet. Over? refund the bets. The game got postponed. Refund the bets and just like,
and
refund
have the have these books lose money, Dave? What are you kidding me?
Oh, have these these same people that bet on the first game,
brother.
The same people that bet on the first game lose money on the second game anyway. Of course, they're. That's true. But like, I mean, again, the bookies over here, I don't bet. I mean, but like, but again, like, it just makes no sense to me. And if like the union are going to lose out on a substitution after like before the game's even kicked off because they have to make a change in their starting 11 or the team that started, like, it's crazy to me. Unless and then it's just baffling. You see it in most games in England, if a game gets postponed, they restart the game from the start and you get to make the changes, as many changes as you need, or whatever. Like, you play who's fit, basically. But yeah, it's baffling.
Valerie says ban gambling. Valerie, that's long gone, but I appreciate the sentiment. Jose, what are your thoughts on this? Because for me personally, I just want to see them come out firing. I want to see them come out pissed. That's really all I care about, because I do think they're going to win. To T-Mac's point, Seattle is reeling. They're really close to spiraling. They really need 3 points on Tuesday. So there's a bit of advantage for the Union in that regard. But what do you think, Jose?
I think I'm in agreement with you, right? It's hard not to. You want this team to come out firing, feel a little bit of fire in their belly and want to, you know, do something. But I think more importantly, I think this is actually an incredible opportunity for someone like Jesus Bueno, right? Yep. Someone who just got a new contract or a contract extension in the offseason, has barely featured this season, and now he has the opportunity to play significant minutes without Champions Cup in play, without US Open Cup in play. I'm excited for Jesus. I think it's gonna be cool to see him get an opportunity, though. You know, if we're gonna talk about Andre Blake, I wonder, would it be okay for Jim to just use one of the substitution windows and just sub him out as soon as the game starts, right? Just have Semler ready, and as soon as the match starts, just sub him out. Just sit him down. Like, don't even warm him up. Just have him dress up like it's a little Halloween costume, and they just have him walk off the field. And this is the shit house thing. I don't know how it works, man.
That's an interesting point as well, actually. Even if Anderson's not fit, they start the game with 10 men. They have to stand on the field with 10 men and be like, hold up the ball and have...
Listen, I'm sure there's an answer to a lot of this. I just don't know that we've actually looked at it. Just to be completely fair, I'm sure there's some nonsense to it. But your point stands, Dave. Tried and true. Like, how... if they're not willing to let the 5 minutes that we witnessed Mike in person, if they're not letting those 5 minutes live digitally on Apple TV, on MLS, whatever, for me to watch 5 minutes of fucking Jesus Bueno slipping about, like, did you find him? I saw you point at your phone.
I found the rule behind it, but go ahead.
Okay. If I can't watch the 5 minutes of Jesus Bueno slipping around and looking like a clown because of the water, nothing against him, like, why can't this game just start from minute zero with the rosters that they want? I'm sure if you were to ask Schmetzer and Curtin, do you want to just start from zero, but both teams get the ability to set up the lineups that they want? I bet you they would nod yes really hard. You know what I mean? So, like, what a disaster. Go ahead.
It was funny because that night, if you guys remember, was the night that Jillian and Kyle were driving back home to, I think you guys from Lancaster, York, and somewhere out there. And they popped the tire on 322 and they were there for hours. And that was just basically their night, which was a very long night for both of you. Janice says, Jim doesn't sub, losing one at the start, it's no sweat. She says, good. And then Jillian says, and shout out to Eric for coming from a swim meet. We did too and had to go the second day of it after being up till 3 a.m. Yeah, you guys had a long weekend that weekend. I remember that now from reading your Twitter. Eric says, they need to have a sack race to midfield to see if they can get another sub. And that's the only fair way to do it. Eric, never change, buddy. So according to the MLS postponement policies for injured or unavailable players, at any player in play and at the time the match was postponed who is subsequently injured or unavailable due to a trade, loan, or transfer before the resumption of the match, et cetera, will not count against a team's normally allotted substitution. So in this regard, if Marcus Anderson's hurt, if Blake is hurt, before the match starts and they're ruled out, it won't count as a substitution against the team.
So
it's a smart thing to cut mouth out.
Does that mean that they have to select, though, from those that are available on the bench? Because the Union are already down Matt Real.
Oh, no.
On loan, he's gone. But I mean, you take Andre Blake out. Okay, Oliver Semla. Sorry, I'm giving you the middle finger. Oliver Semla. So who's goalkeeper number two if Blake's already out?
Just in addition to that, I mean.
You know what I mean?
I think you made the point earlier, Jose. Obviously, Chris Donovan starts the game. But, I mean, we all know what's going to happen. It's like Quinn Sullivan's going to play up front. And, you know, Ali Bedoya has only played gone through two games of 90 minutes this year. And he's now about to start his run of playing every minute of every single game. And he will be the guy to come in and replace Anderson if Hansen's not ready to go. I think that's probably the most predictable scenario.
T-Mac says he can add to the bench, not to the 11. There you go.
Okay, so Matt Real's gone. So does that mean then, okay, let's just think it through. Think it through, okay? And again, I'm going back to what I've been riffing about for a long time, but this is, if that's the case, say Blake is out for whatever reason, whether that's true or not, I don't know. If Blake is out, they can add Rick to the bench. Rick just got his fourth call-up to the team. Rick, therefore, in the future, if he ever wants to feature again, needs a contract, the first team contract.
So Monday, you're saying Rick is getting signed by the.
I mean, no. I'm not saying that. Please, I know people watch. People watch.
Yeah, no. I'm just kidding.
But no, I'm just thinking it out loud, right? If he can add to the bench and Andre's potentially out because of whatever, just going off of him limping out the field and the comments that we just, you know, that Todd Lewis recorded and sent over to us. Like, I'm reading within the lines here. It sounds like Andrew Rick might be featuring on Tuesday in some way, shape, or form, whether it's obviously in the 20. Hopefully, nothing against them, but hopefully the Union are not in a situation where they have to send an 18-year-old goalkeeper against Seattle.
That would be very so Union, to be perfectly honest with you. I am excited for Bueno. I know you mentioned that earlier. I do want to see him get some minutes. I think it's well overdue. I mean, he had such a great season last year in so many ways, but he just hasn't been utilized. Now, granted, also Flock's coming back. Does Flock see the bench then? If there's some sort of substitution with these injuries, does he get minutes? Because he was on the bench on Saturday night.
Yeah,
he's back. He's back in the rotation.
That's another good point, Mike. And I know we were talking about international duty and international service, but Jesus Bueno needs minutes, man, because had Venezuela actually qualified for the Olympics, I think it was a sure bet that he would go. But with them not qualifying to the Olympics and Paraguay and Argentina going, Jesus Bueno only has the Copa America to lean on for international duty this summer, and I bet you he would love to go into that, but that seems a little bit more unlikely than being one of the over 23s for the Olympic roster. So Jesus needs to grab this opportunity and really take advantage of it to show his coaches at the international level something to cling on and you know, justify the call-up.
I'm selfishly saying I hope he doesn't just so he can stay with us because we're missing so many players at the time.
Yeah.
But I feel bad for Bueno. The injuries have been an issue with him with the call-ups, and he deserves it. He's played well, but again, he hasn't. Has he seen minutes this season besides what he replaced? Well, he replaced Martinez last night. But before that, was it one of the CONCACAF matches that he's played?
He's featured a little bit. I'll look it up if you want to carry on just a bit.
So Frank says, does MLS have to physically certify an injury? For example, a replacement for Anderson?
That's an interesting question because, I mean, they just go off of reports, really. Like, how does MLS certify? Like, yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what that means.
It's a good question. It's kind of hard to predict. Let's do some score predictions. By the way, if you've been following our picks all season long, we've done well every single week. One of us has hit every week. Last week, guys, we didn't hit on anything. We just lost across the board. So we have to restart our betting streak as well this coming Tuesday. So, Dave, weird lineup, weird game, weird everything. What do you think happens on Tuesday? Score-wise and goal score.
I think they're probably a bit tighter than we think. I mean, you know, playing two games in 2 days, especially, I mean, you know, with certain players, you know, having to play. And I think, actually, an interest, I don't know if Jim mentioned it in the post-match press conference, I mean, the availability of the, Jose Martinez's situation, because he had to come off on Saturday with what appeared to be a leg injury. He had to hop off the pitch, which is the reason for the Bueno change.
True.
So, again, I'm interested to see how that, how that perhaps influences the game at all, if it does, you know, Seattle, you know, I don't know if they just stayed out east because they played in DC and lost. So both teams were looking to bounce back. I'll go 2-1 to the Union. I'll say 2-1.
Okay. And who's scoring for you for the neck in that one game?
Ty Burrivo.
If Ty Burrivo plays, Jose, I'll buy you a 6-pack. If Ty Burrivo scores, I'll buy you 2 6-packs. That's a deal right there.
I'll say the Gazdag will get on the school sheet again. I'll say definitely Gazdag.
Okay. All right. I like it. 2-1, Dave. Gazdag scoring. Jose, how about you? What are you thinking?
I think it's a 0-0 draw, unfortunately. I mean, these are not inspiring lineups. I don't care which way, other way you try to, you know, sell it to me. But it just feels like after, I don't know, I'd like to be proven wrong, but I just see this as a 0-0 draw and the Union move on. I mean, it's a tight turnaround after such a shitty way to lose.
So, interesting thing from Seattle. So, Stephen Fry had a red card last match. Would that mean he's suspended for this coming match?
I don't know. Where's T-Mac? he's reading. He's
no, because reading... if you get a red card, doesn't that mean you're suspended the next match?
I don't know how it works. This is all so foreign. I bet you these are rules that the league puts in place to never actually utilize. You know what I mean?
Thomas is in that anyway, so it's irrelevant. Well, either way, the point I was going to say is that in the last, let's look at Seattle real quick. So they won 5-0 against Montreal at home on April 6th. Since that 5-0 win on April 6th, they've scored a total of 1 goal over the past 3 weeks. They were 0-0 at Dallas. They were 0-2 at home against Vancouver, and they lost on Saturday 2-1 against DC United. The match, again, that Stephen Fry got, looks like a red card, in the 28th minute. So they're not exactly in good form coming in here and from a scoring standpoint. And then Eric actually asks, does Gaza go ahead of Latu? I'm all for it. 1 point from a homestand. So 1 point from a homestand. Yep, that tracks for the Union, which would be a very disappointing homestand entirely. And that's another big thing, guys, we didn't talk about, is that Daniel Gazdag has tied Sebastian Latu as the all-time goal scorer for the club. Dave, what are your thoughts on that? I feel like it's kind of, I don't know. I'm not as excited about it as maybe I should be, but go ahead.
I think perhaps, you know, considering the result of the the last game, perhaps it, you know, losing the game probably overshadowed the moment. I don't think it got much coverage, did it?
Should have gone over it with his miss.
If anything sums up the Philadelphia Union, it's probably that. You know, Gazdag missing an absolute set from like 5 yards, but then was back to goal with two players behind him, one player like wrap his ass, fucking like doing like a back heel, fucking like Cruyff turn into the back of the net, like. From like 10 yards out, that was probably the most summarized Union best of anything. But I mean, a great achievement for him, of course. I mean, especially with not just the longevity of, you know, the way that football is nowadays, but, you know, for a player to in the MLS, especially coming over from Europe, to actually last like 3 or 4 seasons is quite unheard of, really. You see most players come over for a year or two, sort of get their career. Don't disrespect to the MLS, quite a lot of players do come over here either trying to make a name for themselves or. Again, not trying to label the MLS as a retirement home, or they're coming towards the end of their careers for one final payday. All players trying to get their careers back on track. You see some players, but part of Gazdag, who was coming here perhaps to try and make his name, to actually stay for as long as he has with a team like the Union, is that's been great to see. And fair play to Daniel. I'm glad for him, and he's obviously going to break it as well. I mean, you know, you see players at Ali Bedoya at the club who've lasted for such a long time, but. You know, it's quite rare to see, you know, a player of Gazdag's stature and, you know, where he is up on the pitch, you know, play for the team as long as he has, to be as important, to be as prolific as he has, really, is really impressive, especially for a player that doesn't actually play as a striker. You know, the two, obviously was a forward, and you know, great achievement. Obviously, that will leave, presuming it won't get beaten. I can't imagine it gets beaten unless, you know, Carranza stays for a lot longer.
I also feel like people are not as excited about it because most of them have, not most of them, a large percentage have been from the penalty spot, which frustrates people more than anything. But again, he has to make them, so it is what it is there. Jose, any thoughts on that or anything else in regard to Union before we close it out?
Yeah, I think to Seattle's credit, they played a very strong Vancouver team that's third in the West, and DC United under Troy Lesane and really, really getting the most out of Christian Benteke are very different from what the Union saw last year. So this coming Saturday, May 4th, it's going to be a way different game. I don't think it'll be as easy as the Union made it look last year. So that aside, congratulations to Daniel. Listen, a goal is a goal, man. Like, typically on the stat book, you hardly ever see a distinction between a penalty and an open play goal. So credit to him for taking his opportunities, doing what he had to do, and getting it done. Because I think if any of the three of us were in front of the net 12 yards out from a goalkeeper that's a professional, we would fold like a table. Right, like
speak for yourself. Dave is a great penalty kicker.
Oh, I forgot. Dave almost played for the Gills out there in England.
This is all fabricated information, by the way.
No, but listen, the mental side of taking a penalty kick and how often Daniel has done it, and listen, he's probably the most researched penalty taker in this league. Because every time that a team has to face the Union, they probably have to actually spend a good amount of time in how he takes penalty kicks, just because he's so good at them. So for what it's worth, credit to him and congratulations. Who are we? Who the hell are we to say whether or not he's worthy or not?
I agree. I realize I make my prediction. I realize that the Union are much different this season than they have been last year in the terms of how they bounce back, how they handle adversity. They've done well so far handling adversity. I know the Union have typically not come off breaks very strong. I feel like that might have been the case on Saturday. Real Salt Lake is still first in the West. I'll give them credit. They're a good squad. Seattle's 13th in the West. They're just in front of San Jose. This is not a game we should lose. I would hope that we don't lose this game. I think I'm going to be optimistic like our friend Dave and say 2-0. He said 2-1. I think we're going to go 2-0. They'll come out strong. I think we're going to see a Gazza goal. And I think Quinn Sullivan finds it back in the net as well. So we'll do that. But again, thank you everybody for joining us tonight. We hit an hour mark, just almost in a minute, but hit the hour mark. This is Across the Pitch. We try to go live every single week if we can. If we can't, Jose's putting out interviews. We're talking about the games on Twitter, et cetera. So always come to follow us for anything Union related. Dave is Dave GFC Miller. He also covers Gillingham if you follow League Two at all out in England. Jose, I almost called you Jose Martinez. Jose Nunez. Jose R. Nunez. Jose R. Nunez 91 on Twitter has a Substack as well. Does a great job with interviews and all these other things that he can somehow manage in his busy schedule.
Which selfishly, I'll plug super quick, and it's going to be on the AAT site and Substack as well.
There we go.
I spoke with former Union homegrown player Anton Sorensen, who joined Charlotte Independence while I was in North Carolina. The team was grateful enough to allow me to watch a 2.5 hour practice and chat with him for about 20 minutes after it. So a good conversation. Spoke a lot about his experience with the Union. Some good stuff. Loving his time in North Carolina, and I think you'll enjoy it, but it's going to be a good maybe 1,000-2,000 word article. So I'm excited.
Awesome. So check that out from Jose. Always good thing. And he was joined by Mark Kalkenberg, right? Our buddy Mark.
Yeah. He was my chauffeur.
Awesome. Great. And lastly, I'm Mike Barrera, mbarrera1323 on Twitter, sometimes on TikTok. And we will be back probably later this week to discuss the Seattle match as well as the upcoming games for the Union. Otherwise, go Union.
See you guys. Boop.